Welcome to the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast, where we explore family offices, real estate, and the art of preserving legacies and wealth. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and I'm going to be utilizing my experience of investing on behalf of a number of prominent families and working directly for a number of prominent families on their real estate portfolio. I'm going to tap into my decades worth of experience in real estate investing and relationships with some of the most prominent family office leaders in the industry, academics from universities around the world, and industry experts and leaders in the real estate space. So whether you're a family member, family office executive, family office, or real estate enthusiast, the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast will empower you with knowledge and influential voices. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and this is the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast. In this episode of Family Office Real Estate Insights, we speak with Andy Hagens of the Alternative Investment Podcast on sticking to the basics in alternative investing. So thank you for joining us on another edition of Family Office Real Estate Insights. Today, I have Andy Hagens with the Alternative Investment Podcast. Andy, thanks for being on the show today.
Happy to be here, DJ. It's an honor and a privilege.
Well, I'll tell you, we were talking about a little bit before, but you're always doing the interviewing, and now you're going to be the person that's being interviewed. So it's a little bit different, but you know, you guys put on some great interviews, podcasts. You know, that's your main area of the Alternative Investment Podcast. You do have some others and talk about some various topics. But, you know, one of the things that I want to talk to you about today is about what you've been seeing over the last year and a half, right, from investors that you've spoken to. There's investors, there's always families or people that made a lot of money from real estate, for example, right? And so they have certain philosophies. And what I've realized from working for a number of patriarchs is that, you know, they seem to think a little bit different, that really drives to their success. So what have you been seeing from the beginning of last year up until interest rates started to move? And then I want to go into from there to the end of the year, and then from the end of the year till now. So going into the first, you know, three quarters of last year, what were you seeing with the people that you were talking with when it comes to markets or property types and investments?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're right. I mean, I do interview a lot of people. We actually just published episode 101 on the Alternative Investment Buy. So fun little milestone.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, our shows are usually like not quite an hour, but they're 45 minutes. So I'm realizing, wow, I've talked a lot. I can't believe I'm getting paid to talk. It's a lot of fun. But the thing is, you know, I've interviewed so many people, and some of the folks I interview are service providers or technology providers or whatever, but most of them are asset managers. Either, you know, they run a fund or they run a multifamily office, and there's funds, you know, within that. And one theme that we just discussed briefly, you know, before we started to record, but you kind of asked me for, you know, what theme with the family offices that you've talked to. And I was thinking, well, okay, you know, some of the larger asset managers even are born out of family offices, right? I mean, these are guys who've made their money one way or another, oftentimes through real estate, but sometimes through other businesses. They start a family office, they're managing their own money, and it kind of grows into a management company. Or in other cases, you know, they have the family office and they start doing deals with other family offices, and it grows that way. But the theme I noticed on the most sophisticated end of the spectrum, I'm talking the larger asset managers that are, you know, frankly, just doing larger deals, raising larger funds, is it's almost like the bigger they are, the simpler they're thinking. And when I say the simpler they're thinking, please don't misunderstand me. I don't mean that they're dumb at all. They're the opposite. Yeah. I'm learning from them. But I think as an entrepreneur and, you know, in the industry, a lot of us, we tend to try and outthink ourselves, outsmart ourselves, almost like get too cute. And these these guys, you know, at the really top end of some of the guests that I've had, they're investing on big trends that, I hate to say it, are almost obvious, but they're powerful trends that are going to pay out for 10, 20, 30 years. So that's probably the biggest theme that comes to mind.
Well, you know, I mean, when you keep, there's a lot to be said about keeping it simple, right? And also when you said their basic themes, I mean, you know, the three things that I was always told when I worked for a family was don't lose money, don't lose money, don't lose money. And so sometimes when things are obvious, it's sometimes the best place to be, right? So what was happening going into the end of the year? You know, we started seeing rising interest rates, mm-hmm. you know, and then all of a sudden we had a change in cap rates of expansion. And then we also had, you know, real estate values being altered. Obviously, that's changed over the last couple of months. But were people starting to pull back? Were you seeing just a lot of the people you were talking to sort of holding tight or actually acquiring, investing, et cetera?
There was definitely fear in on the private side of the market, like no question. And I think especially in Q3, you know, when things really, it just kind of felt like all of a sudden after this incredible, you know, second half of 2020, 2021, and even the beginning of 2022, after this like incredible, crazy 2-year run, it's like the music's playing and we're all dancing. We all knew the music was going to stop. But then the second it stopped, it's like this moment of, I don't want to say paralysis, but there was definitely a month or two where it wasn't, maybe fear is the wrong word, but just kind of nervousness, kind of awaiting around to see, are we in for another crash? Are we in for another 2008? Are we in for this, you know, another huge correction? So that Q3, honestly, a lot of nerves, and even myself, it's even rubbing off on me, you know, talking to my guests, but you can kind of feel the nervousness in the industry and with investors. And then I think in Q4, it started to, you know, it became more of like, okay, well, this is a little bit of a new normal. Like it wasn't quite so new. It's like, okay, interest rates are higher. Cap rates are expanding, you know, a tiny bit, not enough in my opinion, but you know, they're relaxing a little bit, and maybe the market is not going to totally crash, right? There's still a little bit of anxiety. And by the way, anxiety in markets is not a bad thing, right? DJ, you know, well, like when everyone is totally excited and everything is going gangbusters, that's really a time when you should be nervous.
That's right. You should be holding back, right? Instead of ready to pounce. And, you know, one of the things that I saw during the recession, there was a lot of families that actually were waiting to see that uptick happen, right? So, I mean, the reality is that they actually missed a lot of the upside. So they got in after the fact, where during COVID, families were starting to say, okay, let's start building some dry powder. Let's start building some money that we can actually invest. And, you know, the same thing has been the sentiment over the last 6 months or so, where they're like, all right, we think we're going to see a lot of distress coming up. So let's wait, you know. So it's like they learned from the past, right? and trying to implement that now. Now, one of the things I will say is that, you can make money in any market, right? You can make it when things are up, when things are down. But also, you have to look at the fundamentals. Right? Because the fundamentals, the end of the day, is going to tell you and dictate you what's happening, right? So let's talk a little bit about the fundamentals that you've seen some of these successful people looking at or taking.
Well, yeah. And you know, honestly, back to the point about, you know, dry powder and kind of waiting mm-hmm. this out, it's almost like I'm beginning to hear whispers that like there might be a leg, we might be at the beginning of the leg of a bull market, but it's going to be a bull market that makes everybody angry. It's almost like everybody,
why would that be?
If you're sitting on dry powder, mm-hmm. you know, it's really annoying that assets aren't being repriced faster. I mean, that's my, you know, if you're holding on cash and you're saying interest rates are high and, you know, I hate to say it, but you want a market correction. And frankly, when a market you know, goes up by 50% or whatever, depending on the MSA, in 2 years, I mean, a little correction can be a healthy thing. So when you're waiting for this healthy correction and you get like a really mild correction, it's kind of like, really? That's it? You know, it's almost like you're hoping for more, you know, more opportunity. So I think there's, you know, just beginning to be, but again, it's almost like if it is a bull market, I think it's almost going to annoy some people. But as far as, you know, what families that I've talked with and the more sophisticated asset managers, they have high conviction on their core bets. And whether that's, so for instance, let's take multifamily, right? It's, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand that when there's a housing, you know, when we're short 5 million housing units in the United States, that's just a big supply demand imbalance. And that's the type of imbalance that, quite frankly, you can probably invest even in an imperfect market condition and still do quite well, right? Because the core fundamental of that particular market is so strong. And I think you see that with certain pockets of real estate, you know, supply chain, logistics type real estate. There's also that kind of supply and demand mismatch. So I think a lot of times, you mentioned the three rules for a family office, you know, don't lose money, don't lose money, don't lose money. I think there's a like a gravitational pull towards those types of sectors where people feel safe. And I mean, I don't blame them. Like I understand it is safe in a way, right? Like you could see a market going up or down in a year, but when you have that kind of fundamental underpinning the market, I think it does, you know, if you buy a multifamily building, there's going to be demand, you know, for those housing units 10 years from now, because there's just such a shortage.
Yeah, it's you know, a couple of comments with what you said. I mean, real estate lags the market and it's a hard asset. So it's hard to see those changes, the cap rate expansions and, you know, et cetera, for sure. But back to what you're saying about the fundamentals, I mean, at Evergreen, we were working on a project down in Texas. And it was workforce related. And here there are a demand today for 200,000 units. And we were only going to take care of 1% in 5 years. And that's with no increase whatsoever, right? Mm-hmm. And when I look at that, I'm like going, okay, so what are my chances that there's going to be demand, you know, mm-hmm. only fulfilling 1% out of the total. And you know, it still goes back. It always goes back to the fundamentals. I mean, look, if people are moving to areas, which they continue will due to cost of living, quality of life, jobs, right, where they're going, then you have to keep that in mind. And, you know, once again, there's always ways you can make money. I think that instead of, you know, families, investors waiting and not looking at any deals, you need to dig into them, right? And you need to say, hey, what's, you know, what's the real opportunity here? And from a sponsor perspective, what have they done in the past? Have they been through this before? Because if they've seen this show, they know how it's going to end and what they look for, maybe mistakes they made in the past. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, and as an investor, and if I were a family office or managing one, you look for that track record, not one market cycle. I mean, you want to see two or three market cycle track records, right? But DJ, it's interesting, like what you're talking about how it all goes to the fundamentals. I'm like, are these family offices talking to you? Or are you talking for them? Or maybe you just all rub off on each other and you talk to so many of them. But it's funny to me because when I think of family office, I think of, you know, large amounts of capital, obviously, and I think sophistication. And but then whenever I talk with them or when I talk with you, I hear the message like, no, it's pretty boring. It's fundamentals. It's digging into deals one at a time, and kind of going back to not outsmarting yourself, not getting too cute. We're betting on, or we're investing in, I should say, big macro trends, and then it's deal by deal, aligning with sponsors that have a proven track record. I mean, in a way, that's boring stuff, right? Like that's not some super unique angle, but it's just good practice.
It is, but you know, it makes a lot of sense. One of the reasons how, you know, we talk about the Family Office Real Estate Institute, obviously we're doing a video here today. when I started in the space about 8 years ago, you know, one of the questions that I asked somebody that had been seasoned in the industry was like, so what are you guys working on? Because I wanted to understand the industry. And she goes, we had 60 people for a conference in Israel. I said, what'd you talk about? She goes, oh, you know, hedge funds 101. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, maybe she doesn't know what she's talking about, because these are people worth hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. And you're telling me that they don't understand the fundamentals. Well, the reality is they spent their whole life in chemicals or tires or technology. And now they have all this money after 40 years and they don't understand hedge funds, real estate, venture capital, private equity. And then you start throwing in things like the OZs, right? Which has a whole nother component on the real estate side. And so in many ways, what's the easiest way to understand, you know, an investment? Fundamentals, right? And so it's the easiest to, if you're not that into the and understanding the various investment types, right? So you go back to that and you know, keep it simple once again, like we were saying.
Well, I think boring can be good, right? I mean, if you have boring, consistent 7, 8, 9, 10% returns year after year over multiple decades, that's the good kind of boring, right? And so I think that's what DJ, by being exposed to you and being exposed and having, you know, the blessing to interview some of these families and just talking to these very sophisticated investors, that's really one thing that I've just soaked up, is that boring is not bad, right? A consistent, you know, delivering that 8% return year after year and doing that consistently, it's a very good thing for ultra high net worth family office. I think that would be looked at, you know, not as a failure, that we have the boring strategy that's repeatable, that's, you know, driving good returns. And then another angle, you know, for instance, the tax planning area, this is something you talk about all the time, is how many of these family offices don't even leverage 1031 exchanges when they do transactions. Well, that's boring, but it's, you know, it's easy money, I guess, in a way. It's easy after-tax money. So I think it's all rubbed off on me a lot with the realization that boring can be good, and you don't need to get cute. You don't need to get too complex. You dive into the fundamentals, a simple, sound strategy with proven people based on strong fundamentals. DJ, I'm sorry, I have you muted on my end.
Okay, sorry, that was myself. So do you know, or can you guess what the average return is for a family office on their overall portfolio?
I would guess 7%, but I don't know.
It's exactly what it is.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, real estate wise, it's about 12%.
Okay.
And, you know, there's deals that obviously they want to see the 20s, they want to see the 25s, the 15, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it goes back to you're not going to come into this type of wealth again. And so you do need to make good decisions with a lot of the things that you just said, right? It's the people you're investing with. It's the product type. It's the investment type of what you're doing. And you know, is a good fundamental, you know, opportunity as well. What is your thoughts on, you know, one of the things that you guys do is you'll have these conversations, right? You'll do these interviews. You'll also provide opportunities where investors can listen to some of the people, right? Mm-hmm. And have you seen a drop off over the last 6 months? Have you seen about the same number? Now, you're always increasing for the number of people that listen to you guys. Mm-hmm. But have you seen, I would think it's been pretty consistent in the manner where it goes back to relationships, right? Where they understand what you guys are doing, or they're seeing some of the same sponsors that are coming back. I would imagine that has an impact on as a whole.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I think working with sponsors, and we've worked with a lot of them, I guess, over the, you know, past couple of years as we've been building our business. First of all, in the last 6 months, it's almost been like bifurcated, where some sponsors have really struggled, and in some cases, through no fault of their own, it might just be the sector, geographic region, or whatever. There's just kind of what I would call localized challenges. But then it's interesting, we've seen other sponsors cruising right along right now, and I don't know, even know that I'd necessarily pinpoint it to any one theme or difference. except it's almost kind of like a localized thing in the sense where one sponsor might have an awesome project, an awesome fund, be very well diligenced, and they're just, the capital raising is slowed down. And then another one, similar quality, might not be having any problems at all. It might just be in a different geographic area or whatever. But I will say, I think, you know, the more, again, you know, the bigger names, I guess, the sponsors that I really look up to, they have that longer term view and that longer term mindset. And if they've been raising capital over, you know, over decades, they kind of know that this comes in waves and it ebbs and flows, and they don't seem particularly nervous to me. And there still are transactions happening. There's still deal flow. There's still investors writing checks. There's still 1031s happening. And I think if anything, you know, it looks like there might be activity that starts to pick up later this year, both on the individual real estate transactions, as well as just general investor activity.
So you guys are, you know, initially with your partner, you guys were doing opportunity zones. I think I was actually one of the first few people that were interviewed by your partner for that. And then you went into AltsDB, and now you're going into, you know, the alternative investment podcast. Mm-hmm. Are you guys focusing in any, I mean, what does that mean? What does that brand resemble? What are you guys looking to do?
That's a good question, DJ. And, you know, to me, it almost goes back to what you said, keep it simple, stupid, or these, we're talking about big macro trends. And what Jimmy and I, you know, he built Opportunity DB, and he was like one of the first people really talking mm-hmm. about opportunity zones, like from the media side, you know, from the independent media side. And yeah, I think you were like his third guest or second guest on his podcast. So obviously you were ahead of the curve as well. So that was, you know, that's where we started, just as a niche, is in covering qualified opportunity funds in this, you know, this kind of little tiny corner of the investment world. But to broaden it out, the big macro trend is for so many people, whether it's, you know, from family office and institutionals all the way on down to the retail investor, that the 60-40 portfolio or that traditional portfolio, so many people have either moved past it already or they're ready to move past it. And so with the alternative investment podcast, what I'm trying to cover, there's a whole industry around alternatives, right? And that's really anything that's not a traditional investment is an alternative investment. And there are so many investors looking for more information. And as you pointed out, with, you know, family offices needing hedge funds 101, our RIAs are a big part of our audience, and as well as high net worth investors. And it seems like we almost can't have enough basic content that just sort of is describing, here's what this is, here's what this product is, here's what this fund structure is, here's what this strategy or sector type of hedge fund is. Because this whole industry, it's not that there's anything to hide, no one is hiding anything, but it just hasn't gotten the coverage that stocks and bonds and, you know, mutual funds have been getting for 50 years. So the end result is it's very opaque. So I think in the long run, what we're trying to do is, number one, bring education to alternatives. And then number two, with our events, is connecting people and creating a community around it.
You know, I don't remember how far back, maybe 10 years or so, but, you know, real estate was in the same boat where it was like, it's finally now considered a major asset class, right? But for so long, it wasn't. And, you know, with the last study we did with the institutes, you know, we're about to start our fifth year for the largest family office real estate study in the world, and it was 24.5% allocation to real estate. And when you look at some of the other allocations, and actually Campton, and I'm happy to share this with you, goes over what a typical portfolio is for a family. And so you do have, you know, this alternative space. I mean, at the end of the day, you can drive better returns, right? And so I think what you're doing is important. You know, education is really what it comes down. Once again, that's how the institute just happened, was just providing education, because you never can assume that people understand or they don't understand, and you can't invest in something you don't understand. So once you have an understanding of it, then you can start saying, hey, this looks pretty good, you know, or maybe there's something I should take a look at here. And so I think with what you guys are doing, you know, it's great. Well, so what do you say? Sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say thank you. And I agree on the need for education. I love what you're doing with the Institute. And as you kind of pointed out, the real estate and the alternatives, they generate higher returns, but they also generally do so with less volatility. So yes, it's win-win. But in terms of hosting my show and trying to bring more education, I mean, I have the best job, but I also love the seat that I sit in because I'm an LP, right? I'm not an RIA. I'm not a financial professional, which allows me to ask the dumb questions, right? Because it's like, well, what do you expect? You know, I'm just an LP. So it's like, I can ask anything, but then it turns out there are lots of RIAs and other professionals who want to know the answers to the same questions. It's just, I'm not afraid to ask the dumb questions.
100%. And in fact, when I do my interviews, I will do the same thing because I'll know, I've just worked with so many families and four families that I know where that gap is. And so I'll ask questions that I may know, but I know that people that are listening, they don't know. And right. And I think that, you know, it's sort of like that thing in class, right? When we'd sit in class and the teacher would be like, ah, oh, there's no dumb questions. And everybody's afraid to raise their hand because they didn't want to look dumb. But somebody does raise their hand, they ask the question, and they're like, half the room is like, oh yeah, I'm glad he asked that or she asked that because I didn't know it, right?
Yep.
So I think that's, you know, I think that's big. So what do you see 2023 looking like in the real estate and alternative space?
Well, I think alternatives are kind of what we're talking about, that big macro trend. I think they are an unstoppable juggernaut. I mean, I think there is so much momentum. I think family offices, they caught on a while ago, as you've pointed out. I think very high net worth investors are catching on. I think even retail investors are catching on. And at the asset management level, you know, I have asset managers, like pretty big asset managers talking to me, and they are so interested in getting thought leadership and getting, you know, marketing and awareness on their alternatives products. So even like the world's largest asset managers who have huge products and stocks and bonds and all these traditional investments, even they know that alts are the future, right? So it's not really a secret anymore. And I think that there's so much momentum behind the alternative space that, yeah, I don't even know, you know, are we in a recession? Are we not in a recession? Sure, things have slowed down. Sure, inflation's higher. Sure, interest rates are up. This may be a muddle through kind of a year, right? And then we may even start to see another leg up, and it may be, you know, we could see a bull market if we get one. I think it's going to be the bull market that makes a lot of people angry, but whatever you think the market's going to do, it's probably going to do something different, right? So I've kind of learned to have a little bit of an agnostic approach to the market, but my instinct is always telling me that the market's going to do what nobody expects. So I think that we might see a bull market by that theory.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been saying publicly for years now that we're not going to see a recession on the real estate side till like 27, 28. I mean, we haven't gone into a recession. I mean, it's only two quarters anyway, right? They have negative GDP, but I think it is a hiccup. And I think that interest rates are going to flush out and things will be figured out, right? And once again, there's always going to be an opportunity. But, you know, these alts, one of the things that I realized when I started working in this space, I met with a family office and I said, you know, what have you guys been doing? What have you been working on? And they start telling me how they had invested in Uber and Twitter and all these other companies. And I literally walked out and said, no wonder why the rich get richer, because they have access to deals that nobody else does. Well, these alts, a lot of these alts that we're talking about have been out there, right? But they've only been allowed and available to a select few. And now, just like you talked about, I mean, it's been sort of going down there to even down to the retail side, right? So when there's more people that can have access to this type of investment, you're going to have more opportunity, more awareness. But once again, you're going to need additional education because these are outside your standards, stocks and bonds, right? And how they work. And so I agree with you.
Absolutely. And what you mentioned about the family office, if I get the number wrong, forgive me, but it's like 24.5 or something average allocation.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, why will that number be any different for a retail investor, right? I mean, at the end of the day, even if it's through a REIT, a publicly traded REIT or something like that, at the end of the day, if real estate is posting higher returns with lower volatility, then I think, you know, we should be spreading the word. And I think that that should be trickling down, and it is trickling down, maybe slowly, but it's definitely working its way into portfolios at every level.
Well, I'll tell you, Andy, you've hit on a bunch of good points. I think that, you know, outside of education, people do need to be aware of alts for 100%. I think what you guys are doing, you know, is fantastic. And so Andy Hagins with the Alternative Investment Podcast. These guys are good friends of mine. And usually I don't say this, but you should definitely plug into them to listen to what they're doing and what they're talking about, because it's definitely worth your time for that. And we're glad that we had you on the show. And thank you, as always, for having me, which you guys have done a number of times now in the past. And, you know, we look forward to having another conversation. I mean, we're sure going to be going into an area that, like you said, I mean, we might just see things get really going that people are going to be angry about, which would be a great conversation to have. And then at the same time, you'll be able to give us even a more in-depth about what you're seeing on the outside and the real estate as well. So thanks so much for being on the show today. And, you know, let's do this again.
Sounds great, DJ. I appreciate it.